Welcome to the Album Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Andy, Don, and Dude.
What's up, fellas? I'm tripping balls. I don't think I could say that.
I'm tripping bellies.
That was my Dave Matthews. Sorry.
It was great. Okay. So this is the Album Nerds Podcast. I'm Dude. I got Andy and Don with me. Andy, you ready to get psychedelic? I mean, neo-psychedelic? Red pill, blue pill?
You take the red pill, you stay in Wonderland, and I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
I got this orange pill, too. I don't know. I might try that one later and see what happens.
I think that's called a Dayquil.
Oh, well, that'd be fun, too. How you doing over there, Don?
Wow, when you just moved your arm, I saw trails.
Oh, man. We're reaching. So as I said, this is the Album Nerds Podcast. We love albums, the album format, and we've got a great show for you today. We're going to be highlighting three neo-psychedelic albums. We'll each pick one and break it down for you. Don's going to ask us a deep question. We're going to have some shout-outs to some album-related items that we're digging, and then, of course, we'll spin that wheel of musical discovery to find out what we're talking about on the next show. This week, it's time to take a trip.
So happy if I had a psychedelic lava lamp.
That's what I'm talking about!
Neo-psychedelia, a genre that draws inspiration from the sounds of 1960s psychedelia, has produced a diverse array of albums that blend classic psychedelic elements with modern production techniques and alternative music influences. Neo-psychedelic albums have continually pushed the boundaries of psychedelic music while maintaining a connection to its roots. Today, each of us will present a neo-psychedelic album.
Trippy. Totally. Yeah, I guess I never really thought about it. Like, there's psychedelic elements in music, but I hadn't ever really explored or thought about this as a movement or genre. So it's been an interesting week. What other albums did you consider for this before making your final choice? Anything stick out for you guys?
Yeah, this is a pretty wide genre and a lot of interesting stuff in it. I listened to most of the stuff in the 90s and 2000s. Things like Primal Scream, Super Furry Animals, Spiritualized, Ween actually had some pretty fun records in the 90s there. The one I almost went with was from Animal Collective. They had a really bunch of good records in the 2000s. Merryweather Post Pavilion was the one I came back to. Really fun experimental kind of elements of electronica, but also like 60s pop is a big part of their sound as well. Yeah, I love the genre personally. It's one of my go-tos.
Of course you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Makes sense.
What did you find in your excursions, Don?
Well, I didn't go too far from my comfort zone. There's a side project for Robert Smith of The Cure and Steve Severin from Susie and the Banshees called The Glove. It was released in 1983 called Blue Sunshine. So it's kind of this just gothy psychedelic pop music. Unfortunately, apparently, Robert Smith had something in his record deal where he wasn't allowed to sing for another group. So most of the lead vocals are done by this person named Jeanette Landry. But it's definitely an interesting album.
Never heard of it.
Interesting find.
It's actually a reference to Yellow Submarine. Remember the glove? Like the big blue glove?
Yes. Yeah. Flying around.
Yep.
Yeah, so a lot of the things that Andy mentioned at the top, I explored those, including Foxygen, which was a band in early 2000s that I was really into. But it was more kind of straight up psychedelic for me and a little less neo, maybe. Fine line. But one that I really did consider for this, just because it's an interesting, I think now very appreciated album, Mazzy Star, So That Tonight I Might See. Dream pop duo known for that ethereal sound and Hope Sandoval's voice, Fade Into You being the big hit. So yeah, I mean, it's a little more sleepy. So maybe for the come down, if you have to right. Put it in psychedelic terms. But yeah, I'd never actually listened to it all the way through before. So it was an interesting experience, but not quite right for what I was looking for here. So why don't we get into our choices?
You choose me?
All right, for my neo-psychedelia selection, we are talking about Tame Impala and their 2012 album, Lonerism. This is the second studio album for the Kevin Richard Parker led project from Sydney, Australia. Got Parker handling all the writing, producing, and recording of 99% of the instruments and vocals on this record. Even took the cover photo, which I thought was impressive.
Looks kind of like someone just took a
snapshot. It's like giving too much credit for that.
Or one of those disposable cameras.
Yeah, I just pulled out of his pocket. Anyway, let's play the second single from the album. This is called "Feels Like We Only Go Backwards."
And if you've ever ridden in an Impala, it does feel like you're going backwards. Hey, yo.
It's out of the car joke. I didn't see that coming. Nice.
No, me either.
Parker said he wrote that to be inspired by the Beach House song, Walk in the Park. You guys familiar with that kind of ethereal dream pop group, Beach House?
No, sir.
I'll have to revisit them someday, also from this era. My clickbait headline for Lonerism is... Parker's breakthrough success feeds an indulgence in studio trickery and pop-curious sounds. I was a big fan of their debut album, Inner Speaker. I think we may have talked about it on the show at some point. Big rock, psychedelic sounds, kind of like space, spacey vibe to the whole thing. This record is kind of a response to that, I would say. This is much more of a shimmery kind of... much less guitar sound, much more in that synthesizer vibe here. And this is a lot more just studio wizardry happening here. And he spent over 2 years kind of recording and tweaking and bedazzling this record, I guess you could say.
Bedazzling, that's about right. Yeah, it feels still very spacey, but more like inner space.
Is this the Martin Short movie you're talking about?
That too, I love that movie.
Somebody help me!
Not as funny as it was to me when I was 14, but it's still funny.
It's more of a inner exploration than an outer exploration.
Yeah, that's what it just sounds like somewhat, you know, when you close your eyes and just let your mind wander.
Yeah, kind of like your inner thoughts, like being stuck in your own head, sort of. Yeah, there's a lot of sounds bouncing around in there, and it does feel kind of contained in this shimmering goo, I guess you would say, a cocoon of
God
psychedelia.
Okay.
All right. Why don't we play the first single from the record? This is Apocalypse Dreams.
It's actually kind of hard to choose a clip from that song because it is kind of all over the place. So, you know,
a lot of these songs are for all of our picks, I think.
Yeah, that's true. It's kind of sort of the nature of the genre.
Yeah. Do you want to get the vocals? Do you want to get the jam thing? Do you want to get the psychedelic sounding moments? You know, it's tough.
So Kevin Parker supposedly recorded that track after watching the 2011 film Melancholia. Have you guys ever seen that? Kirsten Dunst, really kind of a dark movie. There's like a meteor that's going to hit the earth or something like that. And I don't know, but it's kind of melancholy.
Yeah.
Meteor, you're my only friend. I make a Joe Dirt reference to give you some context as to where my movie tastes lie and why I'm not familiar with that film Don mentioned.
So Apocalypse Dreams, I would say it's epic, you know. I mean, a lot of songs I think on this album are kind of epic, but it's, you know, kind of all over the place, but it's got that sort of lush, dreamy sound, seemingly complex chord progressions, you know, just a lot of dramatic changes and stuff. It's, I don't know, it's a lot to take in, but it's also, you know, I think kind of pleasing to the ear, which I think is, again, true for most of the album. The lyrics explore kind of existential questions, change, anxiety, personal growth, yada, yada, yada. But yeah, one of my...
So in other words, it really stuck with you.
Well, it was a hell of a yada, yada.
Please, Mr. Impala, make with the pretty noises. No more yada. Yada yada.
It is. I mean, the vocals and the lyrics, they do seem sort of incidental. You know, I mean, they musical experience. It, you know, it's kind of hard to.
It feels it's more like one of the instruments. Yeah.
Lot of it really kind of buries it in the mix there. I think intentionally.
Yeah. So my clickbait headline is "Lonely Stoner Discovers Synths and Accidentally Creates Psychedelic Masterpiece." That might be a little strong. I'm not sure it's a masterpiece, but it's a damn good album.
It's a piece.
Yeah.
It's a piece. Not a piece-o, but a piece.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, I went back and listened to the first album, and there is, you know, significant growth, I think, between both. You know, I think he is embracing more, I guess, electronic instruments. And then I think after this album, he goes even further down that road. Yeah. Not even sure there's guitar on the albums that follow. It's a good blend of sort of pop sounds, but also that sort of crazy, you know, sort of psychedelic vibe. And I, going even back to the 60s, I think, you know, like we listened to that Zombies record, Odyssey and Oracle, like a lot of mm-hmm. the best psychedelic things still has that like pop mm-hmm. hook or something to it, yeah. You know, but just surrounded by goofiness.
I think but this and the other albums we're going to talk about, these seem less rooted in drugs or trips or anything. It's just more about the dreamy soundscapes being painted with psychedelic sounds and music rather than some specific path. You know?
Yeah. Weirdly, this seems less focused on the trip and more the sound of the 60s.
Yeah,
it's interesting how much pop has to do with psychedelia. I didn't think about that originally before we started doing this episode, but that really was like a focus for him on this record, was making really kind of disposable pop orientated songs. I found a ton of quotes for this album. Must have been interviewed a lot during this. Parker said, pop music is in a way so much more pure than all other types of music. There's no intellectual level. It's just pure feeling. And that feels like what a lot of ways get into here. There's not a lot of substance. This is a lot of kind of style, which I think is, it's cool. It's a cool sound. I think this record to me does feel a little bit more disposable than his earlier album and maybe even the one after this. Not in a bad way. It does leave an impact, but or more the collective sound, I think, leaves an impact on me, unless the individual songs. But there are moments that do stick out. I think one of those is probably this next song we're going to play, called Elephants.
So, a bit of a departure from the dreamy tone of the rest of the album, but it's kind of glam rock, arena rock almost, like jock jams kind of vibes to it as well.
Yeah.
But it's sort of the time too, you know, the Black Keys were hot around this time. So I think this song was just like goofing around with that sound. But Kevin Parker described it as a satire of the bully archetype. It's the guy who thinks he's great. He's the jock. He also said something about that he doesn't really like that song, but it paid for his house or half of his house.
Yeah, I read that
so
too.
He has mixed feelings about it.
Yeah, it was really popular for them. It doesn't really fit with the rest of the record, I would say. Maybe it, you like it in there?
I kind of like the break, yeah, you know? It was kind of like a, you know, a couple slaps in the cheek, wake you up a little bit, and then you can ease back into the spacey journey. My clickbait headline to describe the album, Lonerism. What happens when Kevin Parker goes full Lennon on psychedelic soundscapes? Never go full Lennon. Yeah, the Lennon-esque nasal tones, particularly on this album, I think more so than some of the others, maybe because of all the effects on the vocals. Across the Universe by John Lennon really came to mind at times here. I'm surprised it doesn't get talked about more when it comes to Tame Impala.
It's the first thing I noticed about them. I think I heard this song and I was like, oh, kind of sounds like John Lennon.
It's neo psychedelia, but not. It's also, I think, it's a modern technology take on more of a traditional psychedelic sound.
Yeah.
All in all, I thought it was a very pleasant listen, especially, I mean, I was cleaning records at the time I was listening to this primarily, and it was a perfect soundtrack for just kind of being lost in this. I'm doing this repetitive motion, and then this music kind of fit it really well, and I was able to focus on both things simultaneously. It was nice. It was a nice afternoon. Thanks, Kev.
Well, if you're looking for a good accompanying piece on whatever you're up to on your afternoon or evening, check out this very modern take on the psychedelic sound from Tame Impala, Lonerism.
Before we continue our neo-psychedelic journey, why don't we hear a few words from our friends over at Getting Down and Wordy.
Riz.
Greetings.
Gendered language.
Onomatopoeias.
the ick.
What makes some words sound funny?
Why just listen to music when you can overanalyze the words in the songs?
Music, language, and Eurovision all crammed into one podcast.
Getting down and wordy with Russell and Hannah. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Find us anywhere you listen to podcasts.
So go check out Getting Down and Wordy. It's a very interesting way of analyzing music, really getting into what the words are. So check them out.
My pick for a neo-psychedelic album comes from 1986. It's XTC's Skylarking. It's the ninth studio album by the band, formed in Swindon, Wiltshire, England, in 1972. The band at the time featured singer, songwriter, and guitarist Andy Partridge, not part of the Partridge family. Well, I guess technically he is probably part of a Partridge family.
Not the one.
Yeah.
Not the musical family, but...
Also, singer, songwriter, and bassist Colin Moulding, and guitarist, keyboardist Dave Gregory. The album also features drums by Prairie Prince of the Tubes. Remember the Tubes?
Mm-hmm.
And it's produced by Todd Rundgren.
Wow, he's coming up a lot lately.
Yes, yeah. What was it? It was Psychedelic Furs.
And I think I also read that he did some remix on one of the Tame Impala songs, right?
Oh, that's right. There was a Todd Rundgren connection. So actually, the record label just was not happy with XTC's sales, and they thought part of the problem was they just sounded too English. So they gave them a list of American producers, and Todd Rundgren was like the only name they recognized, so they went with him.
Interesting.
Yeah. So anyway, here's the opening cut. This is called Summer's Cauldron.
Mom, do you ever get that not-so-fresh feeling?
Oh, God.
Drowning here in summer's cauldron, under mats of flower lava.
Oh, Peter Gabriel-y.
Yeah.
I still picture myself laying in the fields out there. It's nice.
Mm-hmm. So Summer's Cauldron is an extension of an original poem Partridge wrote called Drowning in Summer's Cauldron. It's the opening cut of the record. It kind of sets the psychedelic tone of the album. Lots of droning sounds. There's a wobbly chorused organ, which Partridge said it actually reminded him of the Beatles' Blue Jay Way from Magical Mystery Tour.
Yeah, I hear that.
Some melodica in there, played by Todd Rundgren. And Prairie Prince, the drummer, was encouraged to play spastic drum fills in the style of Jethro Tull's Sweet Dream. So definitely a trippy way to start the record.
Yeah.
My clickbait headline for Skylarking is Turn On, Tune In, and Drop Out with Nerdy Beatle-Loving Englishman. So, I mean, it's very 60s. You know, I mean, I think a lot of it just, you know, feels like that British psychedelic scene.
Is it more British or is it more 60s? It's a battle there.
Yeah.
So apparently Rundgren had convinced the band that the songs they had written could be a concept album. So it's supposed to be like a cycle of life for a year or something with significant milestones. So there's like birth, young love, family, labor, illness, death, and, you know, then just kind of random moments throughout your life. Because you have like two distinct songwriters in the band. So kind of like Lennon and McCartney, you know, they would sing their songs. Yeah, Moulding and Partridge sort of have their own, you know, distinct styles. And or that concept sort of, you know, made them connect in some way. Let's hear a track that is debatable whether it actually is on this album or not. This is Dear God.
I found this one fascinating. It's the potentially album closer. I like the sort of simpler sound of it, maybe the more British sound of it and less psychedelic in ways. But the critique of religion framed as a letter questioning God's existence, like how can you let these things happen and that kind of stuff, I think is something a lot of people think about and go through. And it just felt very relatable, regardless of what side of that argument you fall on. It's just nice to really connect with something because throughout the album, it's kind of hard to tell if they're being silly or serious. Mm-hmm. And this one seems serious, and the use of a little kid singing at the beginning really adds some weight to it as well. So I appreciate that about that song. And it showed me that that they take their craft seriously, and there's some real poetic deep thinking going on here. My clickbait headline to describe the album, Forget Ecstasy, XTC's Skylarking will give you a natural high.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. It's dreamy and psychedelic, catchy, quirky lyrics at times. What was that one song?
That's Supergirl.
Yeah. It was moments like that where I'm like, are they doing parody or are they doing serious? And it's okay either way, I suppose. It's just sometimes I wasn't sure what direction they were doing. And maybe that had something to do with the different songwriters. But it's lush and it really does channel that psychedelic sound. It probably sounds the most, like Don said, it sounds the most like an album that could have fit in the 60s. There aren't a lot of modern elements. I mean, there's some post-punk sounds here, but it leans more psychedelic.
All right, well, let's hear some more. This is Season Cycle.
Darling, don't you ever sit and ponder about the building of the hills yonder.
There's some of those Klaatu moments right there.
Yes.
Yeah, definitely drawing pretty heavily from that 60s psychedelia sound there.
In fact, there were rumors that XTC was actually Klaatu.
Oh, for real?
No. Okay. No, because Klaatu was rumored to be the Beatles. And yeah. Okay. It just continues with every generation.
Pass on the myth. That song originally was inspired by the Beach Boys and their 67 album, Smiley Smile. As Don alluded to earlier, it's kind of that song particularly focuses on the cycles of life and death as is kind of the larger theme of the record, which I found to be pretty interesting, and I kind of appreciated that the more I listened to it and got a little more depth from these songs. My clickbait headline for Skylarking is XTC continues England's tradition of creating well-crafted pop songs and being kind of a prick in the studio. From what I read, there was a good amount of tension between the producer there, Mr. Rick Rundgren, and Andy Partridge, one of the primary songwriters here. Definitely led to some well-crafted songs, though. I was really impressed with the quality, really, of every track on here. I think this album as a whole is really impressive. Probably the biggest critique of it is more of the pacing. I kind of had a hard time finding good moments on it to kind of like separate the songs. It kind of did all blur a little bit for me. But once I did take the time to really appreciate the individual tracks, I thought they all held up really well. There's some really interesting moments and some cool studio wizardry going on that you might expect in a psychedelic record. Yeah, I mean, I do agree with the dude's point about the vocals maybe being a little cartoonish at times. You can kind of even hear it in Season Cycle there. It's a little bit kind of like a little show-toony sort of sounding.
Yeah.
But I think they pulled off. I think it works generally. It just keeps things interesting. So yeah, I was pretty positive on this. I would like to listen to it some more. I think there's a lot of depth here that I'm probably not appreciating.
Yeah, I think, revisiting it now, I'm surprised by how complex the music seems. There's like a main melody going on, and then there's usually like some sort of counter melody, which is often like kind of distracting from the main melody. And so I think sometimes it's not as receptive to the ear or something like on first listen. I feel like after you hear these three or four times, they kind of make more sense. It's kind of similar to like a Brian Wilson song in that way. Yeah, I mean, I think in some cases you could say maybe some of the songs are a little too busy or a little too, maybe they're not simple enough.
Sometimes it feels like they're being too clever.
Yeah.
You could maybe say that.
Yeah.
And that could have to do with all these kind of big personalities, maybe having a lot of different ideas and the direction.
I picture a lot of middle fingers being held up through the, from the booth to the studio, while singing or whatever.
Yeah, so XTC's Skylarking brings kind of 60s psychedelia to the 1980s with kind of a charming English pop sound. So check it out.
Excuse me, I'd like to ask you a few questions.
It's time for deep questions, fellas. There's never a better time to ask deep questions than when you're dabbling in some substances, I guess. Yeah. Anyway,
if you will,
do you guys have any memorable psychedelic experiences?
So psychedelic.
I could share one that was particularly memorable for me. In my college years, I had just enjoyed a morning and afternoon at tea with my girlfriend at the time, and was just kind of coming down from that experience, and it was
tea is driving. Code for lovemaking.
No,
no, it's a literal cup of tea.
Okay,
the tea was steeped with a vegetable. I should go too specific.
A
here.
Fungus. A
fungus. Yes.
Fungus tea.
You were a fun guy in college.
Oh my gosh!
Right, so we get through this. So anyway, I was coming down from that experience and was driving home along the river, which was near my college. It was a beautiful sunny day. Clouds were out, blue skies. And I was just like super at peace with the world. Just felt very happy with where I was in my life and with everything around me. Just a moment of peace, you could say. And then about 2 or 3 miles down the road, I had the unfortunate... Unfortunately, I ran over a family of possums that were crossing the street.
A family?
Jesus.
Yeah. It just totally wrecked me mentally. God. Like, I was in such a good vibe, such a good place.
Oh, my God.
It totally wrecked me. I still think about it and, like, get emotional.
That's the universe's way of punishing you for taking that fungus tea.
It really did feel like some sort of, like, some sort of message was being delivered to me. Like,
how dare you feel good about the world?
A little bit. How about you, Dave?
So I never intentionally had psychedelic experiences. I'm even, you know, through college and stuff, I was more of a booze hound than I didn't really enjoy smoking things or any of that stuff ever. It's just never been my bag. But one night a buddy and I had driven to a different college to visit some friends of his and got really drunk on my signature cocktail at the time of Captain Morgan and Dr. Pepper and got talked into taking a rip off the old bong. I don't know if something was in it, but I immediately started like feeling like I was melting. My head hit the, like I was sitting on the floor and my head hit the floor and I thought I was in virtual reality. And there were these gold circles in front of me that I had to push out of the way. It turns out I ripped and bent my glasses off my face. And then for hours I was silently puking and
sounds fun.
Melting into the stairs I was sitting on.
Jeez.
Wow. Yeah, it was great.
That's some strong weed.
So to this day, I just am not a fan of, even the smell makes me unhappy. So yeah,
wow.
That was my psychedelic experience. Similar to you, Andy, it was like, don't do that. Someone was telling me, don't do that. How about you, Don?
Well, I was, you know, thinking back to, you know, maybe the first few times that I, you know, tried the, you know, smoking, and I just remember how good the music sounded and stuff. You know, that was like the best part of it. But for some reason, I guess I just must have really been off my head, but I would have like the urge to kind of speak in tongues, you know, like just sort of like, I can't do it when I'm like sober, but like just sort of like
just make gibberish.
Yeah, sounds. Just gibberish. And so, like, I would just be doing that, and, like, I just can't imagine, like, what my friends would think of me. I mean, they just must
are have... Are these people still in your life? Because I have a guess as to why they're not.
That's exactly what I'd be doing it for minutes at a time. Like,
trying to channel something, or was it just,
I don't know, yeah, maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
He was trying to catch the muse.
Yeah. It's just being an ass, I think.
Oh, man, that's interesting. That's not one I've ever heard before.
Yeah. Anyway, tell us about one of your memorable psychedelic experiences. Hit us up on Instagram and Facebook, or leave a comment on our website, albumnerds.com.
All right, so for my selection, I went with the Stone Roses and their self-titled debut album. Formed in Manchester, England in 1983 by Ian Brown and John Squire. By the late 80s, their sound had, you know, with the psychedelic elements and danceable rhythms, had kind of started to take off in the clubs. And it was all part of this Madchester scene with indie dance, indie rave, just this cultural scene that developed in Manchester at the time. So if we throw that term out there, I just want to kind of get it loosely defined. The Stone Roses recorded an album released in May of 1989. It combines the jangly guitars, the groovy bass lines, cryptic lyrics, and a lot of swagger, which I really like. And it kind of marked a moment in British music, kind of bridging that gap between 80s indie and that Britpop explosion of the 90s that was to come. It's dreamy. And it's cool. A lot of, very atmospheric. So why don't we jump in with a little bit of the track Waterfall. She'll carry on through it all. She's a waterfall. It's kind of cascading, kind of like a waterfall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I'm getting a little wet over here.
Okay. Jiggly guitars there, and the lyrics are sort of about, I guess, freedom and escape, maybe. And it has this really cool, seamless transition into the next track, Don't Stop, which is a reverse remix of Waterfall turned into this kind of trippy, experimental thing. It's an interesting choice.
I thought that worked really well.
I think so, too. It's as if it's one song.
Yeah.
I think that's part of why I like it so much, is it's just this perfect bookended beginning and end. I don't know. I've never heard anything quite like that before. To me, it sets the tone for what this album is at moments, where you just kind of get lost in the flow of the water and just get soaked, right, Andy?
Yeah.
My clickbait headline to describe the album. The Stone Roses, the album that kicked off Britpop, even though no one told them to. I guess bands like Oasis were really inspired by these guys, and they kind of missed out, right? They missed out on their own, the thing that they supposedly helped kick off.
Mm-hmm. In terms of like the notoriety and the fame.
Yeah, especially in America. There was like a five-year gap between albums because they signed an 8-album deal with their little record label. They wanted out of it, and
right. It
became a mess. But there's this ease to this album, and it's like if you throw a bunch of ingredients together and you make this dinner, and it's like, oh my God, that's perfect. This is so delicious. And you didn't write down the recipe. That's what feels like happened here.
That's right? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It all seems to have come together perfectly on this record. And it has, you know, Beatles melodies, resonant guitars like the Birds. Kind of, there's some Smiths-ness to this with the way that they use humor in some of the vocal delivery. And there's an arrogance to it as well, which I think for me is something I look for in rock and roll.
That's just the British shining through, I think.
Yeah. Why don't we jump into one of the other tracks on this record? It's Made of Stone. Yeah, I love the sound of that song. Yeah, it's so easy and breezy.
Yeah, it's got a nice flow to it. That's the second single off the album. Super cool little guitar solo there we just heard the end of, and some studio trickery kind of helping sell that psychedelic sound. I think it works really well there, and there's a handful of tracks on this album that I think are just super sharp and really well-written songs.
The psychedelic moments seem like these little splashes. It's driving the sound. Mm. There's these little breakdowns, little guitar solos, little sounds, little, you know, 30-second moments in the song where it's like, whoa.
Yeah,
and then
little embellishments that kind of come up. Yeah. And you're like, oh, yeah, I see some trails, man. All right, let's go back to the music.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah. All right, so my clickbait headline for The Stone Roses is an understated success that helped proliferate a generation of music nerds with better taste than you. This always feels like one of those records to me that like music snobs point to as being like,
yes,
this is the greatest record no one's ever heard of, no one appreciates this kind of thing. I feel like it's a little bit overhyped from that standpoint. I do enjoy the record, but I think it's maybe a little inconsistent throughout the playtime. It gets lost in all the reverb, and particularly the vocal, I think it gets lost a lot. And I don't know, there's moments where it works great, especially when there's a good, strong drum beat, which there are many of the songs here. And when the guitar has some space to kind of play in the mix, I think it works really well. John Squire on guitar, I think he's a really excellent guitarist, but there's so much just happening in the sound here, I think is maybe detracts a little bit from the overall strength of the album to me. But I do enjoy this album. I saw people saying this was like the best album released ever in the UK, like on more than a few publications. I was like, come on.
I mean, it may have inspired a lot of young musicians in the 90s. That kind of talk, I think, is trying to make up for it being sort of ignored in America anyway in the late 80s and early 90s. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of overcompensation.
Yeah, it feels like it.
You know? Yeah. And it reminds me a little bit of the story of The Laws, and, you know, sonically too, another what could have been, and they broke barriers, and but it's more after the fact that everyone's like, this is so awesome and you missed it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, all they wanted was to be loved and adored. So why don't we listen to a little bit of the big one off of this one, I Want to Be Adored.
I like this song just because it has so few lyrics, but it's still like kind of powerful. You know, it's basically just that line. Yeah. It's just that line over and over. I don't need to sell my soul. He's already in me. I want to be adored, you know, so I don't know. Is that the devil in you? You know, it's kind of the spirit of rock and roll, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was actually listening to this and my dog was in front of me and kind of reminded me of him, you know, because he just kind of like sits there and soaks up your adoration, you know.
Right.
But there's definitely a moody post-punk feel to this, which, you know, I certainly love. And it has kind of an iconic bass line from, is it Gary Monty Moonfield? Or Monty, I think, is his nickname. But yeah, great track. My clickbait headline for the Stone Roses is post-punk is Manchester's drug of choice. So, I mean, I still would put this in kind of the post-punk category, but now it's sort of going backwards, you know, so you're going, you know, you're reaching back to the 1960s and, you know, adding some of that vibe to it. I forgot, I think maybe it was the guy from OMD was talking about how with like Britpop and then grunge, it was like finally like when music started going backwards again, you know, because like he felt like the 80s was all a progression with synth pop and, you know, post-punk, but then all of a sudden we started going back. And so certainly this, and then, I mean, the Laws album came out, you know, just after this, kind of recapturing some of that, you know, that 60s, you know, British sound. That track Elizabeth, My Dear, which I think is loosely based on Scarborough Fair.
Yeah, which is like a 16th century folk song or something.
But when I first heard it, I was thinking, oh, like, was this from that Zombies record? That Odyssey and Oracle album. It feels like it belongs right on that album. Yeah, it's not as overtly psychedelic as the other two records we talked about.
The close of the album, I Am the Resurrection and Fool's Gold, probably sound the most Madchester and probably the most danceable and psychedelic of the tracks, like in a more traditional sense, like more consistently throughout them.
Yeah,
they're good songs. I mean, I can't really point to one song that I think is bad. But, you know, I Am the Resurrection. This is the one. She bangs the drums. All just sound radiant and anthemic.
Yeah,
instrumental jams, which I think they did a lot of live. You could hear those moments. It was almost I'm the Resurrection is almost Fish-like in some ways.
That's true. Yeah, there's just the magic on the album. You know, it's kind of just like an unexplainable thing. But like as you said before, it all kind of comes together. And I'm really surprised at how good it is. And I think it's so much better than anything Oasis ever did.
Yeah, I would agree.
I would say it's more like Oasis wrote some more memorable songs, probably. Catchy, I guess you could say.
Maybe, yeah.
But yeah, this it's just the consistency of what this is a full album, which I think I appreciated the most. And the album cover, just, you know, kind of Jackson Pollock style abstract painting, but weird callbacks to things like either the French flag and the lemon slices that are featured on the album cover that I guess were used as a tear gas remedy during the Paris riots. Huh. Just, you know, these little, there's all these details in this record that just all kind of work and it's nice. So yeah, if you haven't heard it or you haven't heard it in a while, or you want to be a music snob like us, go check out the Stone Roses self-titled album.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
Well, this week was a long, strange trip, but have you guys been digging anything?
Yeah, I've been digging a few other things here. It's kind of like year-end time, so I got a lot of year-end lists coming out from different personalities around the internet.
In your satchel?
Oh, that's right. I need to put it inside something.
I think they could be in Tupperware containers because it's 2024 leftovers, right, from the holidays.
Yeah, we got a lot of leftovers here, so it's perfect. Yeah, we'll keep them fresh here, but I got a couple. First one up from Gordy Greep, the former frontman of Black Midi. He has a new album out called The New Sound. Let's play Hole Hole.
I wasn't sure what to make of this when I listened to it earlier in the year.
Yeah. It's pretty bizarre. It took me a while to get into it. Kind of like rock, jazz, hybrid. All the songs are kind of written from the perspective of different people he had met in bars around England. And it does have that kind of eclectic personality. I've been enjoying it.
But the album cover makes it look like it's going to be metal or something.
Yeah.
Nah. It's got some violent cartoon imagery on it.
Not so much. And last one for me here is from English singer-songwriter Laura Marling. She has a new album out called Patterns and Repeat. It's the 8th studio album for the singer-songwriter. First, after having her daughter, deals with kind of life cycles and tradition, passing things on. It's a really pretty record. Let's hear Patterns. Tell them, but you're
lost. I thought it was going to be parallelograms.
Oh. It did have that vibe for a second.
Parallelograms, yeah. That's right. Dental hygienist.
Yeah.
What you been digging on, Don?
Well, I'm not sure I'm digging it, but I just, you know, when I was looking at a list of kind of new things that are out, I saw King Diamond. You guys familiar with, wow, with King Diamond?
Yeah, he's scary.
Kind of this maybe goofy metal singer.
It's like supposed to be kind of satanic.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's another one of those situations. Well, he was in Merciful Fate, but then yeah, King Diamond is also the name of the band, too, kind of like Alice Cooper.
Right.
You know, it gets confusing. Yeah. But anyway, he has a new record coming out in 2025 called St. Lucifer's Hospital 1920, which is supposedly going to be part one of this horror trilogy. Anyway, here's a single, Spider Lily.
His vocal style is known for that stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Very whaley.
Yep, that's the king. Yeah, and, you know, I guess just because I've been listening to a lot of conversation about music of the past year, one of the big themes is how there's these, you know, female pop stars that are kind of dominating. So I figured I'd check out one of them. So Chappell Roan, her album, which actually came out in 2023, The Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess. Here's a song called Femininominum. Femininominum. Femininominum.
Phenomena. I've dabbled in some of this stuff that's coming out. I mean, a lot of it has sort of a 80s Cyndi Laupery kind of feel. I like that.
Yeah, I think all these, like even the Charlie XCX and the Taylor Swift, like I feel all, like all of it has sort of some like 80s synth mixed in. It's I'm glad at least that sound has come around, and yeah, it's an interesting record.
Give it a closer listen.
How about you, dude?
I did some of the same kind of looking back at stuff, and there was an album by a band called Early Moods called A Sinner's Past, number 14 on my 2024 list, and we never got a chance to mention it on the show. They're a Los Angeles-based traditional doom metal band formed in 2015, 70s-inspired, kind of new wave of British heavy metal influenced, and this is their second album, so let's listen to a little bit of Blood Offerings.
Well, it's so 70s, man.
There's some moments in here where there's like voices like, oh, give me your blood and stuff like that. And, and I enjoy that kind of goofy in my metal. So it's just a fun listen. And it captures a lot of those sounds of, you know, your Iron Maidens, but even then your Black Sabbath type stuff. So check that one out.
Okay.
The next one on my list is Jesse Ray and the Carolina Catfish. I have this one on vinyl. It's Live at Off the Record, recorded in early 2024 by this Michigan-based rock and roll blues duo. Swaggering vocals, bluesy guitar riffs. It's very raw, and that energy is captured live, recorded at Off the Record, which is the record store I go to. They've formed their own label. They have these live performances in the store, and they're going to start pressing them and releasing them on vinyl, and you can catch them on all the streaming services.
It's cool.
Here's a little bit of Jesse Ray and the Carolina Catfish with Man's Back / Parade Zone.
Nice. Yeah. Some good acoustics off the record.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's very high quality recording, too. I'm very impressed with what Benji and the crew were able to pull off getting this thing produced and released on vinyl. Proud of Benji for making his record store a place to be and a place that actually produces its own music. So go check that out for sure.
Right, so what are you digging? Let us know. Join us on the socials, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky. Also on our website, albumnerds.com.
It will be a discovery of extraordinary value.
Well, it's about that time on the show, and I'm reminded of the great British musician and pioneer of the psychedelic sound, John Lennon, who said, "Whenever in doubt, turn off your mind, relax, and float downstream." With that in mind, let's bring up my friend and yours, Wadbot, to see what we'll be talking about on next week's episode.
Get ready for a wild ride into the world of funny albums. Next time, you will be diving into three records that mix sharp satire, parody, and musical mayhem, proving that humor and music are a perfect match.
Interesting. Funny albums that can be complicated. What's funny? But we'll have to figure it out. Albums that are somehow lighthearted or...
Does it amuse you?
Yeah, it's some sort got of to amuse you. Yeah. Got to be some chuckles in there. A real challenge from the Wheel of Musical Discovery. She's kicking it off early in the year, making us think.
Just laughing in our faces.
Damn you.
All right, what's your favorite funny album? What else are you listening to? Leave a comment on our website or email us at podcast@albumnerds.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky at Album Nerds. Please subscribe, rate, and review on your favorite podcast app. And please tell your friends if you like the show.
Thank you for joining us here on the Album Nerds podcast. We'll catch you next time, or we're going to yuck it up with some funny music.
Laugh it up, Buzzball. That's good. Yeah, that should be a good episode. See you next week, guys. Happy New Year, everybody, and thanks for listening.
Eat it, eat it, eat it.
Oh, Lord. This is what we're in for.
Yeah, we didn't get any of our psychedelia jokes in here. Like, what's the psychedelia with you? I'm really hoping to get some of those puns in here.
Darn. I missed that.
Bye-bye.